Welcome to House of Comments. Emma Bunnell and I have successfully dodged the draft, and we're here with you to discuss all the week's goings
on. Fairly sure that at least one of us is too old to be drafted.
I think both of us are. And let's be honest, you and I have a multitude of talents.
No one is putting me on the front line of anything with a gun in my hand.
If the nation's national security is in the hands of you and I, the problems are far deeper.
I mean, I was very good at paintball the one time I did it at 19.
I can actually imagine you being completely lethal at that.
Ah, I was amazing, Charlotte. I ended up in hand-to-hand combat with a really good friend.
Yeah, no, I can see that it would get to your head. No, I can see how this could happen. And I'm terrified at what I'm imagining. Well, talking of brutality, let's talk Conservative Party.
Yeah, that's friendly fire mostly.
Yeah,
isn't it?
It is.
I mean,
friendly fire.
Technically friendly fire.
I suppose I should say, you and I were laughing around, I should introduce myself. I'm Charlotte Henry, and as I said, that is Emma Bunnell. Sir Simon Clark, former cabinet minister, dived to the comment pages of The Telegraph to say, replace Rishi Sunak as PM or face a decade of decline under Sir Keir Starmer. Right. There's a few things that interest. I mean, there are many things that are interesting about this. First of all, it seems to me it's interesting because Simon Clark is the first Conservative, particularly of any seniority, that's come out and said, get rid of Rishi Sunak.
Second.
Who, remind me?
Is it Miriam Cates? It's not Miriam Cates. It's the other nutter, Andrea Jenkins.
This is thus proving why you and I should never be in the army if we can't remember a single name. But yes.
I did just remember it. Also, menopausal. Give me a break.
I bet you did eventually. Yes, that's true. I didn't. I couldn't remember it. But he's obviously much more senior as well.
He is more senior, having served as a cabinet minister, although served as a cabinet minister under Liz Truss. Does that really count?
Yeah, he got his 15 minutes of fame. So yeah, Andrew Jenkins has always been a bit of a sort of firebrand outlier.
Andrew Jenkins is basically Nadine Dorries, but a generation below.
Whereas Simon Clark has always come across as a bit more senior and sensible.
I'd tell you one out of two of those is possibly true. Ultimately, Simon Clark is out in front on his own at the moment. And that's okay. The response even from senior conservatives very right-wing senior conservatives has been pretty dismissive. Although, if Priti Patel calls something fatuous and stupid, I'm not entirely sure that's not an endorsement, because it surely
right.
That's what Priti Patel likes. Even Liz Truss let it be known that she didn't support this. He clearly gathered no friends to take with him over the top. Everybody keeps comparing this to the Jeff Hoon, Patricia Hewitt attempted coup against Brown. For me, it looks more like when James Purnell resigned from the cabinet on the night of local elections and went, who's with me, guys? Looking very urgently at David Miliband. To which the answer came there, none.
Yeah, well, they were both quite fun coups. I remember both of them. The Jeff Hoon, Patricia Hewitt day was quite a fun day.
I mean, yeah, but ultimately they fizzled out and went nowhere.
Correct.
With the Simon Clark
and James Purnell exited politics.
James Purnell exited politics, is now working at the BBC.
A very senior role at the BBC.
So he's done all right, you know. But I think with the Simon Clark thing, what I get the sense of is that the strategy is not one big push. It's
drip, death by a thousand cuts.
Drip, 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 drip. We don't know how much more of this mad polling is out there.
Yep. Which we obviously went into quite a big in-depth last week.
Well, we talked about the MRP last week. This week, this week there was a poll that was essentially, who would you vote for, Keir Starmer or Rishi Sunak? Keir Starmer came out a lot higher.
Yeah.
Who would you vote for, Keir Starmer or Superman? And amazingly enough, Superman won.
I mean, Probably I'm going Superman, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it was like this anonymous...
I'd feel a lot safer in a Russian invasion if Superman was the leader.
Not if they have kryptonite.
It's a fair point. It's a fair point.
Yeah, they've all got their Achilles heel, Charlotte.
Yeah.
That's the one of the whole points of superheroes is they can be brought down. So there is a certain element of jeopardy. But in this poll, so essentially, I say Superman glibly. Basically, it was like, who would you vote for in a matchup between Keir Starmer and a non-named imaginary Conservative leader who will lower taxes and fix the NHS? Interesting how they're going to do both of those things. Will be tough on immigration. And I think there was at least one other thing. And it was like, well, okay, but, you know, all Conservative leaders have said they're going to do all of these things. No one believes that you can because a lot of them are contradictory.
Yeah. And also, I'm just going to bore on and make the point I've made basically since we started this show. There's just a sense that the sort of time has run out.
Yeah.
And it happens, as we've said, it happens with every political party that's been in power.
It happens in government. And if you cannot renew in government, and to be fair to the Tories, I think they did renew in government in 2019.
Yes.
But that renewal was poison, essentially. It's what made everything so much better for them very momentarily. It's like drinking a whole load of tequila. They had an absolute blast in 2019, but the hangover has stayed with them forever.
Yeah, obviously then affected by COVID and all the effects of that. And yes, yeah, I think you're probably right. They had that big Boris Johnson night and then... Boris Johnson.
But yeah.
Let's return to Rishi Sunak and Sir Simon Clarke. So Simon Clarke told the BBC, well, he didn't tell the BBC who he thought should succeed Rishi Sunak, which is, I think, notable. He also said he was...
Well, maybe Superman.
Possibly Superman, possibly Wonder Woman. We don't know at this stage. He did say that the BBC, the Conservatives were on course for, quote, a shattering defeat if they didn't change the leader. And no one likes the guy who's shouting iceberg. Okay, thank you.
I mean, if I'd been a big supporter of Liz Truss, I'm not sure I'd have used a word that is also a name for a lettuce.
Sure. He might have gone with, yeah, we probably shouldn't go back to variations of veg.
I don't know who I nicked that off, but I nicked that off someone on Twitter, I'm going to be honest, because it's good to be honest as a journalist and a comedian.
I was going to make quite a snippy joke about the honesty of that statement, but anyway. And he said, I always expected this would be the start of a conversation. I've incurred some pretty hostile comments from a number of people. I could take that, and I totally respect the strong views that something like this evokes. No one likes the guy who's shouting iceberg, but I suspect that people will be even less happy if we hit the iceberg, and we are on course to do that.
I mean, you and I have been very dismissive of Rishi Sunak. Quite rightly, he's useless at politics. But...
Oh, I'd be nice to him in some respects. I agree with you, he hasn't got the political... Can't play politics, but I'd be nice about him in some respects.
But the problem is that the Tories have is I'm not sure that there is. I mean, I think the reason they polled that question, it's quite possible they also polled, you know, people they would particularly want to put into that leadership and have not released those results. Who knows? We can but speculate. But it was a poll that was clearly going to have a certain amount of ridicule, and they would know that. So the fact that that's the result that they put out there tells you that there isn't a standard bearer. I mean, the name bandied around is Kemi Badenoch, but yep. I think she's been pretty clear, apparently, that, you know, while she's absolutely running for the leader after the
general election,
after the election when there's a contest, she has no interest in pushing Rishi Sunak out before that.
Yeah, I think actually, if you're serious about becoming the Conservative leader, that is the approach you have to take.
Yeah, Yeah,
I think
I mean,
you have to suck it up for a year. Make sure you keep your seat.
Yeah.
And be there to clean up the mess and accept you're going to be an opposition leader, not the prime minister.
Yeah, exactly. And also, I think...
While
the party is 20-odd points behind, and in some polls, 27 points behind, in very, very good polling released by the Fabians and YouGov this week... I work for the Fabian Society. Speaking of honesty, in the 150 most marginal seats, it's actually 125 most marginal and 25 most marginal in Scotland, just to be completely clear. The Tories are actually further behind. So they're 34 points behind, as opposed to the 24 points behind they are nationally in that poll. Why would you want to take over now with very, very little chance of that turning around? You may be able to, if the argument is you're a better leader than the others, I think you might be able to stem some of the losses, but you're still going to lose.
That's what I was jumping to say. You might.
And you want the blood on the other guy's hands.
Yeah, you might be able to save a few seats, but you still are the one that leads you into the general election. And also, this is the key point I wanted to make when we started this conversation, actually. I think we have to be honest now. I have been quite literal in my interpretation of how Britain does things and what the British quote-unquote constitution is, which is, you're voting for your local MP, you're not voting for the Prime Minister, you are... So, therefore, and it is the gift of the largest party in Parliament to pick the Prime Minister. But there is only so long public opinion, which doesn't really tolerate that anyway...
Yeah.
You put up with it. There is only so long that it has a mandate, and there's only so much legitimacy you can stretch from that. If they get rid of Rishi Sunak, that successor must immediately call a general election because it's enough.
Yeah.
You don't get to keep doing this. I think, as I say, the legitimacy can only stretch so far.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think in terms of, we had three prime ministers in 2022. Sunak is being lauded for having lasted a year. Good God.
Right.
This is not
Premier League football managers. You don't just get to chop and change and start again.
It's not even grassroots level football managers.
They last longer than Premier League ones.
I wouldn't care. Except don't ever get rid of Jurgen Klopp because he's gorgeous. In terms of where the Tories are at, they are damned if they do and damned if they don't. So do they want to spend the next 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 months, however many it is until the general election, having these very, very visible internal battles, or do they want to have a slightly nicer year? I mean, that really is just the choice. They're not, their legislative program's a mess. They haven't really got anything they're focused on other than the Rwanda bill, which will be clogged up in the Lords and the courts for ages.
Which we discussed last week.
Yeah. What else are they doing? Nothing. So they're running down the clock, but they're running down the clock and the MPs are bored. So they're basically turning in on each other. And I think what will be really more important to the country than to the Tory party is if they do lose and lose big, as looks likely according to the current polling, do they convince themselves that they did so because they weren't right-wing enough and become that incredibly hardcore right-wing rump party that some of them really want them to be?
Yep.
Or do they go, well, actually, we need to be a centre-right party that respects the rule of international law and the rule of law and reaches out to the wider electorate?
A lot of that will depend on who survives. But let's not speculate too far ahead. I want to just deal with this.
No, literally 1 minute ago, breaking news, Liverpool manager Jurgen Klopp to leave his role at the end of the season. I've cursed him, Charlotte.
Blimey. Okay, that normally we get done with breaking news, but it's not normally football breaking news. But anyway.
I mean, usually the breaking news in politics happens literally 10 minutes after we've recorded and edited the show.
Sure, thanks, Ajay Javid. I mean, the quotes from Simon Clarke are interesting. There's an interesting thing about Tory factionalism, right, isn't there? Because there's... Look, I tease Labour endlessly, and I've teased you endlessly about the different groups and the People's Front of Judea and the Judean People's Front and all of that. But the Conservatives recently have taken that to a new level with these five families, and like there's some mafia organisation, and it's... So, and someone put it to me, actually, if you think about it, and I hadn't thought... This hadn't occurred to me, even though it should have. The One Nation lot are actually the largest individual grouping.
Yeah, but they're really well named in their nickname, aren't they? Because they are just the Tory wets. There may be it's like the soft left, right, in the Labour Party. Probably the largest grouping of MPs would identify themselves as somewhere on the soft left spectrum, right? But they are incapable, and I speak as someone from that wing of the party, of actually organising their way out of a paper bag, and actually having a coherent strategy to pursue their branch of politics.
Well, there's that. But of course, the other thing that happens is, as soon as there is any kind of leadership election, major legislative clash, that group that is, in pluralistic terms, the largest, does not become the majority. All the other more right-wing groups outvote them.
Yes and no. I think they probably... I mean, if you look at the head-to-head leadership contest and how they managed to get Rishi Sunak in their second go running, when they are head-to-head against right versus centrist, they are capable of getting what they want that way. It's when it boils down to their selected PM pandering to his right wing on things like the Rwanda bill. Yeah. And they're like, no, we're really unhappy about this. We're so unhappy about it that we'll march through the Yes lobby with grumpy looks on our faces.
Yeah, I mean, there was obviously a bit of a this far and no more. But yes, they did in the end go along with it. That's absolutely true. There's another element to this Simon Clarke thing I want to talk about, because of my, you know, my interest in reporting in media and the media industry. And that is that Sir Simon Clarke wrote this in the Telegraph.
Which paper. Also had the exclusive on the MRP poll, exactly. Which had the analysis by David Frost on the MRP poll that YouGov actually pushed back against.
Exactly. Now, I've a million years ago contributed to the Telegraph. I think it can do some really quite brilliant work.
It has done in the past. I've also contributed opinion pieces, but...
Right.
But I think it got itself into a right old state. And its right old state is a very Janus state, because the editorial staff there are desperate not to be bought out by this, is it Abu Dhabi consortium? Yeah. Saudi consortium.
So we'll do the quick 101 on this. Telegraph and The Spectator were owned by Barclays.
Who had bust.
Who went bust, had to sell it to not be bust. Consortium led by the former boss, Jeff Zucker of CNN, found the money, put it together. We have to be very careful what we say about all this, because Ofcom are currently looking into it. There's a lot of wrangling still to go.
Well, there is, but there's also the government have indicated that they might support the editorial side of the Telegraph in not backing and not allowing this bid.
Well, we should also be clear, technically, the Barclays have cashed the cheque. That Jeff Zucker consortium does, it is theirs to sell or be forced to sell.
Yes, but the government can step in terms of media ownership. So their future, the future of that newspaper, is therefore in the hands of the very prime minister and ministers who they are spending every ounce of their political energy attacking, which I think is quite an extraordinary place to be.
Yeah, I mean, interesting. There's a comment today from Andrew Neil, obviously chairman of The Spectator, who says he will quit if the takeover goes ahead. So lots of moving pieces there. Really interesting. If you're interested in media news, newsletter.theedition.net. But there's, look, we have always known that newspapers and editorials play politics. We can be as naive as we want, but we know what's going on, particularly in the UK. As a general rule, television cannot have a real editorial line, whereas which it can in the US.
Yeah.
Whereas
in the US, it's almost the inverse of us. It's the newspapers who try to be balanced and the television that doesn't.
Exactly. Anyway, so that's what it is. So we can be as naive as we want, basically, but we know that newspapers can play politics.
Yeah. The Telegraph are indeed playing politics, but what they're playing is internal right-wing politics. I wouldn't be 1,000,000% surprised if instead of endorsing the Tories at the election, Telegraph readers told their voters to vote for reform. And given that this is the paper that is referred to as the in-house Tory Bible, that would be a very, very interesting move.
Okay, well, we're doing predictions. I think the Telegraph will tell people mostly to vote Conservative, you know, recommend to vote mostly Conservative, but in certain seats, vote for reform. I think that could happen.
That may be where they land. I'm just saying it's not without the realms of possibility that the Telegraph backs reform.
Oh, to some extent, I think that, yes. One way, or, you know, whether the more full-throated way you're sort of hinting at, or the slightly more new, less grand way that I'm going for. It wouldn't surprise me if in that leader column there is something about encouraging votes for reform. I think you may well be right about that. But it's interesting that this stuff is all feeding through the Telegraph. Perhaps it is because, as you say, it is the in-house paper for the Conservative Party, and therefore that's what, that, you know, they know the audience. That's where it's going. That's, you know, it's a very simple explanation, and sometimes the simplest explanations are the right ones.
Yeah. But as I say, it is, it's not become the in-house paper for the Tory party as a whole. It's become the in-house paper for a wing of the Tory party now. And that wing seems to see the closest enemy as their biggest enemy. And that's what's more interesting to me in terms of the politics of this. The Tories, and I used to say this about the Labour Party all the time. I said the Labour Party will fight the Tories if they have to, but they'd much rather fight themselves.
You have said that.
This is now far more true of the Tory Party. And I speak as someone who, for once, I don't do this. I don't subject myself to this often. But I read Owen Jones's column today on how the left might have been broken and bruised, but they could be resurgent.
Are you okay? Are you feeling all right?
I mean, you know, I had to go down and lie down in a darkened room afterwards.
Sure.
But there's just, in terms of those kinds of noises off within Labour, even when there's the most contentious issues and there were all the resignations over the Israel-Gaza war, that was dealt with internally by both sides in a more in sorrow than anger way. Whereas the Tory infighting is, I'm not sad, I'm very angry and I hate you all.
I mean, there is a unique viciousness to Conservative regicide.
Yeah. I mean, and they are much better at regicide than Labour Party is.
Oh, orders of magnitude.
One interesting thing that was in London Playbook this morning was saying that, and I think Jerry Scott from The Times, that's who it had an interesting thread on this on Twitter, saying that there was a suggestion floated that the leadership threshold from the 1922 committee of numbers of letters that had to be submitted should be raised to 50% of the parliamentary party rather than 15%. Now, I think that that's quite a sensible suggestion for any party. I think 15% is really low.
Very low.
But it is the worst possible timing to do that, because all it does is make Rishi Sunak look weak and like he's trying to change the rules to protect himself. And I don't think that kind of change can be made when you're in danger. I think it's the sort of change that should be made when your prime minister feels very secure.
It's a Tony Blair moment.
These things have driven us mad in the past. We are now well past those moments. So given that, let's look at what we can change to make sure they don't drive us mad in the future. I don't think you can say this is driving us mad right now and I'm the person in trouble with it, so change it.
Yeah, Tony Blair Clause 4 thing. He could only do it because he was at the height of his powers.
Yeah, exactly.
I'll just pick out a couple more quotes from Sir Simon Clarke, really, in the letter. He said... the UK is on the brink, this is the quote, on the brink of being run by Keir Starmer's Labour for a decade or more, and said, if Nigel Farage returns to the fray, as looks increasingly likely, extinction is a very real possibility for our party. I think that's quite a telling quote, actually. Is he saying we need to be more like Nigel Farage, less like Nigel Farage?
I mean, I think he's saying we need to be more like Nigel Farage, or Nigel Farage will eat our lunch from the right.
That's what I assumed it meant.
But I think there is also a real danger, probably a closer danger than I can remember in my lifetime, of the Tory party splitting. And I include 2019, when Boris Johnson removed the whip from so many people. This feels closer to splitting even than that.
Yeah, it does feel like they're really teetering on the edge, doesn't it? He said, Rishi Sunak was not solely responsible for our present predicament. And then the next quote is called his leadership. He said his unaspiring leadership is the main obstacle to our recovery. Now, there's an interesting point here, because I think there is a reasonable argument that Rishi Sunak is not, quote unquote, inspiring. That's not the kind of leader he is. It's not the kind of person he is. He is not going to give the kind of Boris Johnson faux Churchillian speeches. And never pretended he would. That was lots of the reason why some people liked him.
Yeah, he's reassuring, not inspiring.
That was,
or at least that's what he was going for. I think he's not great even at the reassuring now.
That was always his like modus operandi, wasn't it? I'm like calm, I'm technocratic, I'm in control. I've been seen some of his quite interesting things on social media, actually. He turned up at Pinewood Studios, did a whole thing there about Britain's and it is true actually to call it world leading
absolutely
in television production, movie production, special effects, all of that, and that's
smacked around
true.
By Brexit, of course.
Absolutely. He also was at St Mary's watching Southampton, talk about his childhood watching Southampton, and was at the game, as I understand it. So there's been, he's obviously trying in the build-up to the election to do a bit more of a human Rishi Sunak thing.
I mean, they are trying to make it, and you know, all the briefing is that they're looking to do this as a presidential one-on-one Rishi versus Keir campaign.
And that makes sense, because it's about the only chance there is.
It might be. I don't think Rishi's got it.
He might not be good enough to do it, but it's about the only chance.
He has in public. Like, the more he's in public, the more he makes stupid mistakes, like not being able to pay for something with a perfectly bog standard debit card. He's not great at that stuff. But I think also equally that whole Rishi at the helm election campaign is what the Tory right are pushing back against. And if it fails, and it is likely to, what will give the Tory right cover for saying, if you'd listened to us, if we'd gone down the Nigel Farage route, we wouldn't have lost.
Yeah. I mean, what could be quite interesting is if the general election becomes Sir Keir Starmer versus Rishi Sunak versus Nigel Farage.
Yes.
again, this is what Sir Simon Clarke is warning about in his letter, I think.
I mean, I don't think Farage is going to sit the election out on the sidelines completely. Don't know if he's going to come back in as leader of Reform, but I think he'll have some sort of senior campaigning role, which means that he may well do a lot of the TV debates. I mean, I don't think he can do the leader debates if he's not leader, but I mean, you never put it past people kowtowing to pressure from the right. So I just think he will be an element in the election, whatever that element is.
Yes, exactly. Well, it'll be interesting. I guess we need to finish this conversation.
We haven't even mentioned the world famous Will Dry, who ironically used to be Will Wet.
Oh, stop. He
used to be a Tory wet. He was pro second referendum.
Yeah.
He's been on quite the journey by the sounds of it.
No, what I wanted to end the conversation was sort of what happens next, because there was not this huge groundswell and movement and letters going in and Sir Graham Brady turning up at Downing Street this week. And I'm not sure, as you said earlier, that was really Sir Simon Clarke's intention. But we do have to slightly focus on what happens next, not general election next, but the next, you know, to the end of February or whatever. Are we going to see more interventions like this from Conservative MPs? Are we going to see the kind of just this fizzle out as another one op-ed by an MP who is increasingly losing their influence? It's. I'm not sure which way I'm going to go on this. Are the Conservative MPs going to get courage to put their head over the parapet because that's what Sir Simon Clarke has done?
I mean, I think not yet. But there are by-elections coming up. There are local elections coming up. There are mayoral elections coming up. There are plenty of pain points coming up. That could easily encourage a few more people to speak out.
The by-elections obviously are ahead of the local elections.
By-elections are in February. The local elections are in May. It's possible that there could be another by-election in between. It depends what happens with Scott Benton and Blackpool South.
Yes.
Although, I mean, if that gets pushed further, it'll probably just be run concurrently with the locals.
Yeah. I think the by-elections... You could have a really bad night if the by-elections are held together and all of that stuff. You could have a really bad night and people say, okay, that's enough.
And Reform are apparently pushing really, really hard in, is it Kingswood, the Peter Bone seat?
Yeah. And of course, the thing that I'm hesitant about with the local elections in May is that will that be the point? That might be too late. By the time you organise yourself, May might be too late to get something done for a general election a few months down the line.
I mean, if they haven't got at least 80% of a plan by now, then they're fucked. The problem is that 80% of a plan actually workable? Assuming all of these things don't go their way.
I would think that actually if you wanted to do something, you organise yourself for a couple more weeks leading up to the by-elections. You wait to see if you get really kicked at the by-elections. You go, okay, enough's enough. This is the last point. We can save it. Here, we're going to go now. Here are the letters. Here's the candidate. We can save, and then we'll go to let them bed in, and then we'll do a general election. And you could even have the general election the same day as the locals, as we've discussed before.
I would be willing to put money I don't have on Rishi Sunak being the person who fights the general election for the Tories.
I agree with you.
But I am also willing to put money I don't have on them not shutting up in the interim.
I agree with you.
There you go. Consensus.
On that consensus note, we'll wrap up. Emma, where can people keep up with you?
I'm on all the social medias at Emma Burnell_. And you can read my Substack newsletter, Hard Thinking on the Soft Left.
Wonderful. I'm at Charlotte A. Henry on social media, or at Charlotte A. Henry, I think, on TikTok. Head over to theaddition.net with some of my blogging on all things media and tech, or sign up to the newsletter, newsletter.theaddition.net. If you love this show and want to support us, head over to patreon.com/houseofcommentspodcast. We'll put the link in the show notes anyway, and you can support us for just £5 a month. Just kind of a coffee, isn't it? A glass of, well, not even a glass, less than a glass of wine.
Less than a glass of wine.
So we'd love your support. We're going to start doing, as we've said, once there's a bit of a groundswell of people there, we'll start doing some exclusive audio content for those lovely people. But it immediately gets you access to the paid versions of both our newsletters, which collectively would be £100 a month, a year. But you'll get it for just 60 if you sign up via our Patreon. And we will love you forever for your support of independent, female-led
media. We'll even give you a shout-out on here. We'll say thank you. As we get a groundswell, we'll start to do shout-outs.
Oh, quite so. We may even send you loving messages. Who knows?
Who knows?
But we'll appreciate it greatly as we grow this
show.
Hey,
look, Valentine's Day is coming up. Why don't you give us the gift that keeps on giving?
Yes. We'll put the link there. Any support for the show is hugely appreciated as we look to grow in 2024. And with that in mind, we'll see you next week.